Chapter 104. Informing her in my letters all our communications were secretly forwarded through Miss Mills, that I had much to tell her. In the meantime, I put myself on a short allowance of bear's grease, wholly abandoned scented soap and lavender water, and sold off 3 waistcoats at a prodigious sacrifice, as being too luxurious for my stern career. Not satisfied with all these proceedings, but burning with impatience to do something more, I went to see Traddles, now lodging up behind the parapet of a house in Castle Street, Holborn. Mr. Dick, who had been with me to Highgate twice already, and had resumed his companionship with the doctor, I took with me. I took Mr. Dick with me, because, acutely sensitive to my aunt's reverses, and sincerely believing that no galley slave or convict worked as I did, he had begun to fret and worry himself out of spirits and appetite, as having nothing useful to do. In this condition, he felt more incapable of finishing the memorial than ever, and the harder he worked at it, the oftener that unlucky head of King Charles I got into it. Seriously apprehending that his malady would increase, unless we put some innocent deception upon him, and caused him to believe that he was useful, or unless we could put him in the way of being really useful, which would be better, I made up my mind to try if Traddles could help us. Before we went, I wrote Traddles a full statement of all that had happened, and Traddles wrote me back a capital answer, expressive of his sympathy and friendship. We found him hard at work with his inkstand and papers, refreshed by the sight of the flowerpot stand, and the little round table in the corner of the small apartment. He received us cordially, and made friends with Mr. Dick in a moment. Mr. Dick professed an absolute certainty of having seen him before, and we both said, very likely. Apostrophe, the first subject on which I had to consult Traddles was this: I had heard that many men distinguished in various pursuits had begun life by reporting the debates in Parliament. Traddles having mentioned newspapers to me as one of his hopes, I had put the two things together, and told Traddles in my letter that I wished to know how I could qualify myself for this pursuit. Traddles now informed me, as the result of his inquiries, that the mere mechanical acquisition necessary, except in rare cases, for thorough excellence in it, that is to say, a perfect and entire command of the mystery of shorthand writing and reading, was about equal in difficulty to the mastery of 6 languages, and that it might perhaps be attained, by dint of perseverance, in the course of a few years. Traddles reasonably supposed that this would settle the business. But I, only feeling that here indeed were a few tall trees to be hewn down, immediately resolved to work my way on to Dora through this thicket, axe in hand. I am very much obliged to you, my dear Traddles. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said one. I'll begin tomorrow. Apostrophe, Traddles looked astonished, as he well might, but he had no notion as yet of my rapturous condition. I'll buy a book, apostrophe, said I, with a good scheme of this art in it. I'll work at it at the Commons, where I haven't half enough to do. I'll take down the speeches in our court for practice, Traddles. My dear fellow, I'll master it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, dear me, apostrophe, said Traddles, opening his eyes. I had no idea you were such a determined character, Copperfield. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know how he should have had, for it was new enough to me. I passed that off, and brought Mr. Dick on the carpet. You see, apostrophe, said Mr. Dick, wistfully, if I could exert myself, Mr. Traddles, if I could beat a drum or blow anything. Apostrophe, apostrophe, poor fellow. I have little doubt he would have preferred such an employment in his heart to all others. Traddles, who would not have smiled for the world, replied composedly. But you are a very good penman, sir. You told me so, Copperfield? Apostrophe, apostrophe, excellent. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said one. And indeed he was. He wrote with extraordinary neatness. Don't you think, apostrophe, said Traddles, you could copy writings, sir, if I got them for you? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Dick looked doubtfully at me. Eh, Trotwood? Apostrophe, I shook my head. Mr. Dick shook his, and sighed. Tell him about the memorial, apostrophe said Mr. Dick. I explained to Traddles that there was a difficulty in keeping King Charles I out of Mr. Dick's manuscripts. Mr. Dick in the meanwhile looking very deferentially and seriously at Traddles, and sucking his thumb. But these writings, you know, that I speak of, are already drawn up and finished, apostrophe said Traddles after a little consideration. Apostrophe Mr. Dick has nothing to do with them. Wouldn't that make a difference, Copperfield? At all events, wouldn't it be well to try? Apostrophe, this gave us new hope. Traddles and I laying our heads together apart, while Mr. Dick anxiously watched us from his chair, we concocted a scheme in virtue, of which we got him to work next day, with triumphant success. On a table by the window in Buckingham Street, we set out the work Traddles procured for him, which was to make, I forget how many copies of a legal document about some right-of-way, and on another table we spread the last unfinished original of the great memorial. Our instructions to Mr. Dick were that he should copy exactly what he had before him, without the least departure from the original, and that when he felt it necessary to make the slightest allusion to King Charles I, he should fly to the memorial. We exhorted him to be resolute in this, and left my aunt to observe him. My aunt reported to us, afterwards, that, at first, he was like a man playing the kettle drums, and constantly divided his attentions between the two. But that, finding this confuse and fatigue him, and having his copy there, plainly before his eyes, he soon sat at it in an orderly business-like manner, and postponed the memorial to a more convenient time. In a word, although we took great care that he should have no more to do than was good for him, and although he did not begin with the beginning of a week, he earned by the following Saturday night 10 shillings and 9 pence. And never, while I live, shall I forget his going about to all the shops in the neighborhood to change this treasure into 6 pences, or his bringing them to my aunt arranged in the form of a heart upon a waiter, with tears of joy and pride in his eyes. He was like one under the propitious influence of a charm, from the moment of his being usefully employed. And if there were a happy man in the world, that Saturday night, it was the grateful creature who thought my aunt the most wonderful woman in existence, and me the most wonderful young man. No starving now, Trotwood, apostrophe said Mr. Dick, shaking hands with me in a corner. I'll provide for her, sir. Apostrophe and he flourished his 10 fingers in the air, as if they were 10 banks. I hardly know which was the better pleased, Traddles or one. It really, apostrophe said Traddles, suddenly, taking a letter out of his pocket, and giving it to me, put Mr. Micawber quite out of my head. Apostrophe apostrophe, the letter, Mr. Micawber never missed any possible opportunity of writing a letter, was addressed to me, by the kindness of T. Traddles Esquire, of the Inner Temple. Apostrophe it ran thus. My dear Copperfield, you may possibly not be unprepared to receive the intimation that something has turned up. I may have mentioned to you on a former occasion that I was in expectation of such an event. I am about to establish myself in one of the provincial towns of our favored island, where the society may be described as a happy admixture of the agricultural and the clerical, in immediate connection with one of the learned professions. Mrs. Micawber and our offspring will accompany me. Our ashes, at a future period, will probably be found commingled in the cemetery attached to a venerable pile, for which the spot to which I refer has acquired a reputation, shall I say, from China to Peru? In bidding adieu to the modern Babylon, where we have undergone many vicissitudes, I trust not ignobly, Mrs. Micawber and myself cannot disguise from our minds that we part, it may be for years, and it may be forever, with an individual linked by strong associations to the altar of our domestic life. If, on the eve of such a departure, you will accompany our mutual friend, Mr. Thomas Traddles, to our present abode, and there reciprocate the wishes natural to the occasion. You will confer a boon on one who is ever yours, Wilkins Micawber. Apostrophe, I was glad to find that Mr. Micawber had got rid of his dust and ashes, and that something really had turned up at last. Learning from Traddles that the invitation referred to the evening then wearing away, I expressed my readiness to do honor to it, and we went off together to the lodging which Mr. Micawber occupied as Mr. Mortimer, and which was situated near the top of the Gray's Inn Road. The resources of this lodging were so limited that we found the twins, now some 8 or 9 years old, reposing in a turn-up bedstead in the family sitting room, where Mr. Micawber had prepared, in a wash-hand stand jug, what he called a brew of the agreeable beverage for which he was famous. I had the pleasure, on this occasion, of renewing the acquaintance of Master Micawber, whom I found a promising boy of about 12 or 13, very subject to that restlessness of limb which is not an unfrequent phenomenon in youths of his age. I also became once more known to his sister, Miss Micawber, in whom, as Mr. Micawber told us, her mother renewed her youth, like the phoenix. My dear Copperfield, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, yourself and Mr. Traddles find us on the brink of migration, and will excuse any little discomforts incidental to that position. Apostrophe, glancing round as I made a suitable reply, I observed that the family effects were already packed, and that the amount of luggage was by no means overwhelming. I congratulated Mrs. Micawber on the approaching change. My dear Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, of your friendly interest in all our affairs, I am well assured. My family may consider it banishment, if they please, but I am a wife and mother, and I never will desert Mr. Micawber. Apostrophe, Traddles, appealed to by Mrs. Micawber's eye, feelingly acquiesced. That, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, that, at least, is my view, my dear Mr. Copperfield and Mr. Traddles, of the obligation which I took upon myself, when I repeated the irrevocable words, I, Emma, take thee, Wilkins. I read the service over with a flat candle on the previous night, and the conclusion I derived from it was, that I never could desert Mr. Micawber. And, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, though it is possible I may be mistaken in my view of the ceremony, I never will. Apostrophe, my dear, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, a little impatiently, I am not conscious that you are expected to do anything of the sort. Apostrophe, I am aware, my dear Mr. Copperfield, apostrophe pursued Mrs. Micawber, that I am now about to cast my lot among strangers. And I am also aware that the various members of my family, to whom Mr. Micawber has written in the most gentlemanly terms, announcing that fact, have not taken the least notice of Mr. Micawber's communication. Indeed, I may be superstitious, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, but it appears to me that Mr. Micawber is destined never to receive any answers, whatever to the great majority of the communications he writes. I may augur, from the silence of my family, that they object to the resolution I have taken, but I should not allow myself to be swerved from the path of duty, Mr. Copperfield, even by my papa and mama, were they still living. Apostrophe, I expressed my opinion that this was going in the right direction. It may be a sacrifice, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, to immure oneself in a cathedral town. But surely, Mr. Copperfield, if it is a sacrifice in me, it is much more a sacrifice in a man of Mr. Micawber's abilities. Apostrophe, oh, you are going to a cathedral town? Apostrophe said one. Mr. Micawber, who had been helping us all out of the wash-hand stand jug, replied. To Canterbury. In fact, my dear Copperfield, I have entered into arrangements, by virtue of which I stand pledged and contracted to our friend Heap, to assist and serve him in the capacity of and to be his confidential clerk. Apostrophe, I stared at Mr. Micawber, who greatly enjoyed my surprise. I am bound to state to you, apostrophe he said, with an official air, that the business habits, and the prudent suggestions, of Mrs. Micawber, have in a great measure conduced to this result. The gauntlet, to which Mrs. Micawber referred upon a former occasion, being thrown down in the form of an advertisement, was taken up by my friend Heap, and led to a mutual recognition. Of my friend Heap, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, who is a man of remarkable shrewdness, I desire to speak with all possible respect. My friend Heap has not fixed the positive remuneration at too high a figure, but he has made a great deal, in the way of extrication from the pressure of pecuniary difficulties, contingent on the value of my services, and on the value of those services I pin my faith. Such address and intelligence as I chance to possess, apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, boastfully disparaging himself, with the old genteel air, will be devoted to my friend Heap's service. I have already some acquaintance with the law as a defendant on civil process, and I shall immediately apply myself to the commentaries of one of the most eminent and remarkable of our English jurists. I believe it is unnecessary to add that I allude to Mr. Justice Blackstone. Apostrophe, these observations, and indeed the greater part of the observations made that evening, were interrupted by Mrs. Micawber's discovering that Master Micawber was sitting on his boots, or holding his head on with both arms, as if he felt it loose, or accidentally kicking Traddles under the table, or shuffling his feet over one another, or producing them at distances from himself apparently outrageous to nature, or lying sideways with his hair among the wine glasses, or developing his restlessness of limb in some other form incompatible with the general interests of society, and by Master Micawber's receiving those discoveries in a resentful spirit. I sat all the while, amazed by Mr. Micawber's disclosure, and wondering what it meant, until Mrs. Micawber resumed the thread of the discourse, and claimed my attention. What I particularly request Mr. Micawber to be careful of, is, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, that he does not, my dear Mr. Copperfield, in applying himself to this subordinate branch of the law, place it out of his power to rise, ultimately, to the top of the tree. I am convinced that Mr. Micawber, giving his mind to a profession so adapted to his fertile resources, and his flow of language, must distinguish himself. Now, for example, Mr. Traddles, apostrophe said Mrs. Micawber, assuming a profound air, a judge, or even say a chancellor. Does an individual place himself beyond the pale of those preferments, by entering on such an office as Mr. Micawber has? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.